Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome back to another edition of the Cleveland Baseball Talk Podcast. I'm Joe Noga, joined by Paul Hoynes. Hoynesy, the Guardians take 2 out of 3 from the Seattle Mariners, jumping all over George Kirby in the first couple of innings. And the offense, particularly the top three or four batters in the offense, looked just incredible on Wednesday as they rolled to an 8-0 shutout win. Logan Allen picks up the win. His second of the season. Everything looked like it was firing on all cylinders for Stephen Vogt and the Guardians on Wednesday afternoon.
Yeah, that was a complete ball game, Joe. Great starting pitching, and you know they staked Allen to a big early lead, a 5-0 lead after two innings, and then they just watched Seattle's defense crumble. I mean, those guys, they had one of those games, man. They could not catch a ground ball. And that infield, it looked like it was cursed or something. But, you know, like you said, really a great performance from the top of the order. Quan, Jimenez, Ramirez, they go a combined 7 for 10. They score 7 runs. It was a relentless offense. They put pressure on Seattle, and Seattle cracked.
And even when Josh Naylor, you know, didn't come through with a hit, he still hit two sacrifice flies, drove in 3 runs without the benefit of a hit. Even when, you know, they didn't succeed, they still succeeded. This is how the game plan is supposed to go. And it's just incredible how, you know, they're sticking to what they're trying to accomplish in every at bat. And it's working.
Yeah, I mean, right now, it's only, you know, 7 games into the season. They are leading the American League in runs, tied for American League in hits, leading the AL in doubles, triples. They're second in batting average, first in sacrifice flies, second in stolen bases. You know, this is like a cavalry charge coming over the hill at you.
Yeah, and think about where they were last year, you would be just mind blown to know that this club is leading the league in runs scored, and it's not like they're just doing it against they're doing it against the AAA A's or whatever. This was against the last two games was against, you know, two of the better pitchers in the American League in Luis Castillo and George Kirby. It's not like they're doing it against nobody's. It's they're actually succeeding against good competition as well.
Yeah, against Kirby and Castillo in 9 1/3 innings, they score 12 earned runs, 19 hits, and they could have easily swept this series, Joe. You know, the first game in, they lose 5-4, but they were coming back. You know, they kind of outplayed the Mariners over the last 6 or 7 innings. They just couldn't, you know, score the equalizing run and then take the lead.
Yeah, and think about where they would be and you know what the conversation would sound like had they swept the Mariners heading into this series with Minnesota opening up this afternoon. We'll talk a little bit more about that series there, in a minute here. But I wanted to just looking at the box score and just running down some things that sort of jump out at me. Stephen Kwan at the top, 3 hits in the game, 3 for 5, and scored 3 runs. He's got an 842 OPS, a 353 batting average, and right behind him, looking like a natural fit in that number two spot, Andrés Giménez, you know, 2 for 3 with an RBI and a 1015 OPS. I mean, when those guys are getting on base and setting the table for Jose Ramirez, this offense looks completely different than it did last year.
Yeah, and, you know, they've done a great job getting on base. Jose is coming through, you know, with big hits. He had 2 doubles, 2 RBIs yesterday. I think, you know, maybe he feels like he doesn't have to carry the whole load, at least, you know, in the early going of the season, because last year certainly looked like he had put a lot of pressure on himself, especially in the second half.
And when guys like Will Brennan are starting to click and starting to come around and show something down towards the middle and the bottom of the lineup, that helps extend things as well. And I think that that goes a long way. And really, even just the guys that that didn't play, who had played a part over the first, you know, 7 games, you know, guys like Tyler Freeman, he didn't even have to, you know, contribute yesterday. That's again, you know, an encouraging sign at this point. Small sample size, I know. I mean, it's, you know, it's 7 games. It's not, you know, things can still, you know, trend in the wrong direction at this early point in the season. But it, where they're standing right now, I think they're feeling pretty good about themselves.
Yeah, they have to be, Joe. I mean, I know Stephen Vogt, the manager, is really delighted in the offensive approach that the Guardians have taken, not only the game plans that Chris Valleca and the other hitting coaches are putting together. And he said, you know, that's one thing, you know, you can put together a great game plan, but it comes down to the players executing it. And he has really been happy with the way they've executed. I think a great example was 2 nights ago with Will Brennan, had a 7-pitch at bat against Luis Castillo, kept fouling pitches off. Then finally on an 0-2 count, single to right field, Jose Ramirez goes from first to home when Haniger boots the ball in right field. And then Bo Naylor fouls with a 2-run homer. And suddenly they've got a 3-0 lead. And he said, you know, that's the kind of execution that he's talking about. Those are the kind of at-bats that he loves to watch.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun to see that. On the pitching side of things, Logan Allen pitches into the 7th inning, allows 4 hits, walks 3, strikes out 6. He looked sharp and you know, in command. That's the kind of effort that you need to see out of Logan Allen pretty much every start this year. It was fun to watch him, you know, just out there sort of dodging and weaving and in and out of counts and whatever. And, you know, he pitches into the 7th inning, first Guardians pitcher to starter to do that. What'd you think of Logan Allen's effort yesterday?
Yeah, I think, you know, Joe, every year there's one pitcher on the staff that is blessed with a lot of runs, an outpouring of offense whenever he steps on the mound. And Logan Allen in his first 2 starts looks like that guy. Against Oakland, they gave him a 3-0 lead in the first inning. And, you know, he cruised from there. And yesterday, you know, 5-0 after 2 innings. And you know, I think a pitcher's demeanor changes, you know, when he's working with a big lead, an early lead, especially. He gets more aggressive. He can take more chances. He can feel more confident. He knows, you know, 1 or 2 runs aren't going to beat him. And that's what Allen looked like yesterday.
Yeah, Zach Plesac opens up the paper this morning and sees Logan Allen getting, you know, 8 runs of support. And he just wants to throw his phone across the room or whatever. The bullpen did an outstanding job as well. Cade Smith did give up his first hit in an inning of work. Smith and Tim Herron finished the game off after Nick Sandlin came in to finish an inning for Logan Allen with you know, after Allen gave up his final walk of the day. But in general, the bullpen has held up I guess a lot stronger than what many of us expected. I don't think I think in the clubhouse they would tell you, oh yeah, we knew that the bullpen was going to be all right, even though with all these injuries. But you know, who knows as far as that goes. What have you thought of the bullpen in terms of their effort the last couple of games?
Joe, I think in the first seven games, the pen's been, you know, off the charts. They've really asked a lot of them. They've had several short starts by the rotation. The bullpen is filled in. They pitched a lot of innings. And like you said, guys like Heron and Cade Smith, Sandlin is starting to come around. You know, he missed a week in camp, late in camp, with that illness that went around camp. So he's just kind of bouncing back. But Hunter Gaddis has pitched really well. You know, so they've gotten a lot of big innings from key guys. Tyler Beattie has really been kind of a revelation. He's a guy that, you know, can go an inning, he can go two innings. You know, I think he's fit really well into the pen. So there's a lot of guys like that, you know, that stepped up and filled those holes in the bullpen when they had so many injuries.
I want to remind our listeners, if you tuned in here, the best way to stay up to date on the latest news on the Guardians on this road trip and throughout the season is Guardian Subtext. It's $3.99 a month to subscribe, and you get text messages sent directly to your phones. You can skip all the social media and you know, just communicate directly with Hoynesy and with me. Sign up by going to cleveland.com/subtext. Or by sending a text message to 216-208-4346. Jose Ramirez, again, climbing the Guardians record ladder, I guess, the franchise records. He moves into the top 10 in all-time RBIs with 752. He passes Albert Bell. He ties Albert Bell with the fourth most multi extra base hit games in his career at 99. By the time all is said and done, Jose Ramirez is going to own every hitting record in franchise history.
Yeah, Joe, we're seeing a guy, you know, put together a Hall of Fame career right in front of us. We're seeing a guy that, you know, came up from the minors. He weighed about 150 pounds. He was like a water bug player, you know, running all over the place. Now we've seen him fill out. He's developing into a guy that hits for average, guy that hits for power, that can run. It's just doing this right in front of our eyes. And like you said, Joe, I mean, by the time he's over, his career is over, he could have – he could be in the top three of every significant hitting statistic in Cleveland history. And to compare him with Albert Bell right now, that blows me away, man. I mean, RBI, you know, I mean, multi-hit extra base games. You know, and he's so much nicer than Albert. You know, you can talk to Jose without the fear of getting your head ripped off. So that's a nice thing too.
And where do you think they're going to put the statue of Jose when he retires? That's the next big question. I guess they got to wait until he, you know, gets on the ballot for the Hall of Fame before they decide, you know, where the statue is going to go at the ballpark. But they'll probably be into their third or fourth ballpark renovation by the time that comes up. So we'll figure it out. As far as another franchise icon, Shane Bieber, it's pretty good, pretty likely, as long as the weather cooperates, that we'll see Shane Bieber starting the home opener. It'll be the first time Shane Bieber starts a home opener with actual fans in the stands.
Yeah, I don't know if Cleveland can take this, Joe. The total solar eclipse and Bieber on the mound, the hottest pitcher in the big leagues right now, starting the home opener on Monday. You know, and we've got the women's NCAA finals in town. So, you know, this Cleveland's a happening place right now.
Yeah, it's a lot going on, and Shane Bieber on the mound is going to be appointment viewing for all Guardians fans. As long as he's in a Cleveland uniform this season, I think you're gonna want to tune in every fifth day to see what he'll do next. We did get some news out of the Guardians, off the field stuff yesterday. The I guess Progressive Field is going to stay Progressive Field for quite a long time. The club and Progressive Insurance working out a 13-year extension of the naming rights agreement that will keep the ballpark at the corner of Ontario and Carnegie as a Progressive Field through 2036, with an option to extend that if the club's lease goes beyond that. So Progressive, get used to calling it Progressive Field for quite a long time, Hoynesy.
Yeah, and I'm not sure what the financial terms were involved, Joe, but I've been told that it's not going to have a direct impact on the payroll, but every little bit helps. And I don't know if it accounts for the shortfall in the TV deal, you know, that they had to take to get one more year with Bally's to televise this season. But I think it's a solid move. Progressive is a Cleveland institution, and so are the Guardians. So it makes sense. It's a good marriage.
Yeah, and a part of the agreement does include the new signage at the ballpark that reads Progressive. I know that a lot of people walk into that ballpark and think, wow, they really have overdone it with the Progressive signage all over the park. You see it above the scoreboard. You see it in center field. You see Progressive pretty much everywhere that you can slap a Progressive logo or Progressive sign on. Any space that's not covered is getting covered now. They're even putting up new lettering on the outside of the park around the top, the upper deck. They've put up new blue LED lights that when they turn those on, they have the Progressive color that follows their color scheme. So all very interesting to see. And we'll see how many more Progressives they can squeeze into that ballpark over the next, a couple of days here leading up to the home opener when we finally sort of unveil the new look and as we go there. Speaking of stadium news, this just in from Oakland, the Athletics will be moving to Sacramento for the next 3 years until their ballpark in Las Vegas is ready. They'll be playing at Sutter Health Park, the former home of the Sacramento Rivercats. And it's a AAA park, but that's where they'll be for the next 3 years while they build the new ballpark in Las Vegas. So Cleveland has played its last game at the Oakland Coliseum. You were there, and that they won't be going back. Last time this year was that last game of the series on Sunday. What do you think of this move, and what are you going to remember about the Oakland Coliseum?
Yeah, Joe. I mean, I guess it reminds me a little bit of what happened to the Toronto Blue Jays during COVID in 2020, mm-hmm. when they couldn't get back into Toronto and they converted their AAA stadium into, kind of a semi big league stadium in Buffalo. So I guess that's what they're going to, Oakland is going to probably have to make improvements to the Sacramento ballpark to bring it up to MLB code. And that's going to cost some money. But, yeah, my last impression of Oakland Coliseum when I left there in the last game of that four-game series, I'm going to miss the seagulls, Joe. it was cool because, after every game, the crowd would clear out what crowd there was, and it's like flocks and flocks of seagulls would come, swooping in and, diving into the stands, eating the leftover hot dogs and buns and just – swirling around. It was always cool. I always wanted to, I wished I was a seagull, kind of flying around up there with them.
Well, you didn't have any more encounters with the possim in the press box? Was that you,
no,
you didn't see him?
No, did okay, not see the possum.
That's pretty good. And they're the groundskeeping dog, the dog that they have in the clubhouse too.
Reba.
Reba. Is that okay? Reba was the name of the dog. I mean, that's, a lot of fun, some good memories, but the last couple of years have been really leaned out there. So, not not great in Oakland, and the situation, I'm sure they probably don't want to be playing in a minor league park, but you know, if you're putting a minor league team out there on the field, a lot of people would say it's probably appropriate. So it'll be interesting as they move towards Las Vegas to see, you know, what the next 3 years hold. Yeah, like you said, they're gonna have to retrofit a lot of the major league sort of accoutrement has to be you know, set up in that that minor league park. So should be interesting as they continue to go along. All right, Hoynesy, that's going to wrap up today's edition of the Cleveland Baseball Talk podcast. Tomorrow, a strange off day on a Friday in the middle of the season. We'll talk about the series opener with the Twins as they get into AL Central play. But until then, we'll check back in with you on Friday.
Good deal, Joe.